Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Worn Shoes. Before we get started, I just want to apologize for last month. Life and work caught up with me and I wasn't able to get an episode out on time. Sorry about that. In this episode with Marie, we end up talking about her life as a diplomat's daughter and the importance of community. She's an author and a fellow podcaster, and I really enjoyed chatting with her. So I hope that you guys do too. Enjoy. All right. Hey, everyone. I am here with Marie Suazo. Hey, how are you doing today? Welcome to the Worn Shoes podcast.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
Sweet. I have not met Marie in person, but we connected through Instagram. Runs another podcast that we will talk about more later, but we ended up connecting and just chatting about TCK stuff and podcasting interests, and I'm excited to have her on today. To start off, could you maybe, what are some of the places that you would characterize as home or that feel like home to you?
So hearing that question made me freeze up a little bit, because home is really difficult for us to answer, us as third culture kids. And I think it depends on, at least for me, it depends on which home and like how long I live there. But because I lived in South Korea for most of my elementary school days, as well as my early adult years, I like to consider Korea home. But I'm actually originally from the Philippines. So I've lived here for a little bit now, since 2019. And then also I lived all throughout my high school years in Egypt. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you spent a lot of your kind of younger, you said elementary, maybe some middle school days in Korea, and then Egypt for high school, and then Philippines a little bit later, and then back to Korea for some adult years. Is that kind of generally the outline?
So the timeline, I'll give you the timeline. I gave it a little bit weird, so I apologize for that. But no, I was born in the Philippines, and that at the age of 2, I moved to Seoul, South Korea. So that was most of my elementary school days up until I was 11. And then I moved to the Philippines in middle school. So I was here for 3 years. So here being Philippines, because that's where I'm currently located. And then all throughout high school, so from the ages 13 to 18, I was living in Egypt. And then from 18 onwards to an undisclosed number of years, I lived there for college and grad school. And so that's why most of my life I lived in Korea. And then I moved here back in 2019.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty cool. All of those sound like pretty different places. And I could imagine that your experiences there were, pretty different. So would you mind telling me a little bit, you know, about, just growing up in South Korea, and just kind of maybe some of your school and just things that you like to do there, and then kind of what your transition to Egypt was like.
Yeah, so just a disclaimer for people listening who love K-pop and K-dramas. When I was growing up there, it was anything but. Like, people didn't really know much about it. I remember coming to the Philippines for vacation and people had no clue where Korea was. They thought it was part of the upper part of North Korea, which I will not disclose. And there were a lot of confusion there. And so back in the 90s, it was very different. It's not technologically savvy as it was. Everything was a lot quieter. And although there were subway stations in place, it wasn't as intricate as it is now, where everything is smooth sailing, everything is on your apps. So I feel like I lived a quite quiet childhood, just soaking up the culture of Korea in the 90s. And I went to international schools. So when I went to school, everything was through the English curriculum. So I spoke English all the time. All of my teachers, all of my classmates were international students, international teachers, staff. So I was, from the get-go, aside from being a diplomat's daughter, having to move around places, I was already exposed to the world around me. So I was interacting, you know, my seatmate was from Czechoslovakia, which is now, you know, separated into two. Or like the friend across me from me was Korean-American, or like, you know, a friend from Malaysia. So it was just very normal for me to like have classmates from different parts of the world. And we celebrated those different cultures as early as that. So like in my small, limited understanding as a child, I thought that that's how the world works, like how everybody from every different country and place like interacted with each other on a daily basis. Like, and I had no idea that that's not normal. In other places. And then I think that was the biggest difference that I felt culturally speaking was when I would vacation to the Philippines or when I moved to the Philippines after elementary school days. And so I remember thinking, like, why is everyone speaking one language in the Philippines? Like, why was everyone expecting me to speak that same language? How come there's nobody else of other cultures when I came back to the Philippines? Like, it just didn't make sense to me. And so that was the biggest jarring thing that happened on my first move. So everything I knew about Korea, that was my understanding of the world. And then suddenly to come to a country and where nobody is doing that, you know? And then I eventually, my parents eventually found an international school. I say it in air quotes because there was mostly Filipino, maybe like 3% Koreans and like 3 white people, you know? And so that's what they called international. And I was like, this is not what I was used to. And so after...
Sorry, real quick. Where was that school that you just mentioned? Where was that?
That's in the Philippines.
That's in the Philippines. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So when I was in middle school, we moved back here to the Philippines, and that was very jarring for me. I didn't know that, you know, like people didn't live the way that I did back in Korea. And then after the Philippines, we moved to Egypt. And so at least this time around, I had an idea of what transition looked like. I was a little bit older. I was 13 at this point. And when we moved to Egypt, I just embraced it. And because we were part of an international community as well. So that was super helpful. Like the church we went to was an international community. The school I went to was an international school. So for me, it's like, oh, finally, like, again, this is normal. Like, this is my idea of normal, to be interacting with people from different countries and celebrating them and like not it was just really weird to be in a country that was mostly one kind of people, I guess. Like and then granted, when I was older, I didn't realize that way of living was a bubble, like that international community bubble, because in Egypt, I lived in a small town where expats lived. So people from diplomats, businesses, military, missionaries, that was where we all lived in my hometown in Egypt. And so I didn't even know that was a bubble until I was much older. And then this is a bit of a doozy, because in Egypt, so you can imagine the Sphinx, the pyramids, you know, the Nile River, Pharaoh, Moses, that whole big deal. And I would tell stories about camels and, you know, pharaohs and how we're best friends and we get coffee together or whatever. People believe me, depending on, you know, how convinced I was. How convinced they were about my story. But if you think of like the ancient world, like deserts, oasis, and then having to move at this point in the early 2000s to Korea, which is so technologically savvy, where everything is on your phone, you know, everything is so within reach. Like, you know, you push buttons, like nowadays people say like Amazon was like a big deal, but like, oh my gosh, Korea was on it, like in the early 2000s. They just knew it, like delivery, that kind of thing. That is just, you know, they were nailing it back then. So imagine me coming from Egypt, this 18-year-old who basically like runs across the street in the middle of a highway because there's no stoplights, you know, because we didn't have that in Egypt. Then to suddenly like move to Korea where everything was like advertisements, like LED lights, and you know, I was that country bumpkin kind of feeling, where it's like, oh, look at them lights. And so I think that was like the biggest doozy for me too, because it was like, oh, this is not the Korea that I once knew, because at that point it was like 20 years 10 years since I left Korea. And so that was just, so you talk about cultures, like, I think that's like the ultimate culture shock to live in a country that basically had technology that was like basically stuck in time. Now, I don't want to say like technology wise, they were stuck in time, but it seems like Egypt is a period piece. And then to go to Korea, where it's so technologically savvy, like I had to learn how to use the subway and I was so confused, and people had like their transportation cards. So like a lot of countries are adapting that nowadays. But like in Korea, when I went to college, it was a thing already. Like they were just so technologically advanced that I had to keep up. I remember I was writing about this the other day, but the first couple of months I was in Korea, I remembered, because in Egypt, I would have my iPhone, my and it's not iPhone. What do you call it? The music player, the iPod. Oh, my gosh.
iPod. Yeah.
Throwback. So in Egypt, I would have my iPod just walking around the streets, just minding my own business. Yeah. And I did the same thing in Korea. And I crossed the street and I was like, why is no one crossing the street? And I realized I like crossed over to the other side, not looking at the crosswalk, like the walk and like don't walk signal, because that's not what I was used to. Like I just ran across the street and I was like, what is happening? I was like, oh my goodness, like, I don't there's things like that here.
Oh man, that's a lot. You mentioned a couple you mentioned a lot of things that were pretty interesting, and I just real quick, I wanted to, there was a point that really stuck out to me, because you talked about the transition from Egypt to Korea and just kind of being from, technological situation in Egypt, and then kind of move into Korea where everything was kind of, up on the rise and they were starting to move really quick. But it was also interesting when you kind of initially described Korea and when you moved there as a younger kid, and kind of it being, quieter and simpler. And then there's a sense of maybe, going back home, or going back to a place that used to be home, back to Korea, where it's not the Korea that you like once knew. And so that, there's also that dynamic that was interesting. So I don't know if you had any thoughts about that, because that to me at least was interesting. Having recently, I went back to Azerbaijan. I hadn't been there in 5 years, and a lot had changed, and even 5 years. And so, I don't know if you wanted to talk about that or you had any thoughts from the Egypt to Korea and then the Korea to back to Korea.
Yeah, honestly, like the reverse culture shock is real versus the normal culture shock where you have absolutely no idea what the country will be like. Like the first time I ever went to Egypt, like I just kind of embraced it. There's that sense of like, OK, this is new. I'm mentally prepared to accept anything that's new. Yeah. But the reverse culture shock is going back to what you would consider familiar and home, and already having these expectations. And I remember the first day after my mom dropped me off from college, like she stayed probably like about a week. And then she left me. And that's the first time I realized like I've never lived away from my family ever. And I went to familiar places and I remember I had to like look at the subway map. And I was like, I think this is where it is. And like, I had a vague idea, like, because I love books. I'm an author too. So like, I went to my favorite bookstore as a child where we would usually go like once a month or something and pick out new books. And so I tried to figure out where this was, and the whole subway situation was so complicated. And I realized I didn't really take subways as a kid. And I was driven everywhere. And I think I remember taking the subway maybe once or twice when I was younger because we didn't really need it. And so I took the subway by myself as like a young adult trying to figure my way out. And then when I went to the bookstore, it changed so much. It wasn't this tiny little bookstore anymore. It changed. It was like four floors now. It was so like nothing felt familiar to me, except like even the entrance didn't look that familiar to me because they expanded so much of it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, nothing about this feels familiar, because I wanted to go and be like, oh, something to like hold on to, something familiar to hold on to. And it wasn't there. And it was interesting because when my mom was with me before she dropped me off to college, like we visited our hometown in Itaewon. So there's lots of like K-dramas about Itaewon. So I don't know if your listeners can relate to it, but that was my hometown. And our landlady who owned the building we were living in for most of my early childhood, she still lives there. So my mom wanted to visit her. And I call her my Korean grandma because she's the closest thing to a grandma that I have. Yeah. Like an older woman who was there for you like your whole life. And then I told her I got into one of the number one universities in Korea, and she was so proud and like, you know, it, like walking down familiar streets. And so that was like that felt really comforting, knowing at least like my hometown, even though it changed a lot, there were still familiar spaces. Like I think my grandmother's house is the only thing that I would consider like warm and fuzzies, because I still go there. When I was in college, she was saying, you don't come over often enough. I think I came like once every 6 months. She was not happy about that.
Oh no.
It's just busy, you know, college, right? And But so I came back, I came around like once every 6 months. She was not happy about that.
Oh, no.
But like, you know, just having a relationship like that. And actually I went last year when I went to Korea, and she was just so surprised. She was like, because I had to leave very quickly. And when I left Korea as an adult, and so I didn't even get to say goodbye to her, because she doesn't have a telephone, she doesn't have a cell phone, like, you know, she's still living that simple life. But to be able to tell her I wrote a book and, you know, I'm doing well, and I showed her pictures of my family, and so she was like, she knows my brothers by name, and, you know, she calls my mom and dad like her Filipino children. So right there is like the warm and fuzzies. But everything outside of that, you kind of have to like learn and re-navigate. But yeah, that's like I shared so much.
Thanks for sharing, because I mean, you just kind of, you touched on like that the people or that person, you know, your Korean grandma, just kind of being the warm and fuzzy, you know, in her house, but kind of everything outside of that changing. And I think I just related to that, where I kind of when I grew up, I prided myself on being able to navigate the city and kind of knowing everything. And then, going back, that just wasn't the case. You know, I wasn't able to navigate around as independently and as much as I could, but the people that were there when I grew up was the kind of the warm and fuzzy feeling that you're kind of talking about. So yeah, I relate to that. And what you kind of said a lot. Couple other things that you mentioned that were interesting. You mentioned being a diplomat's daughter, and so I assume that's kind of the reason that you guys were moving around. And I know that the book you wrote, you know, Tales of a Diplomat's Daughter. Is that?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I would love it if you could talk a little bit about, you know, what, because I think for the most part, you know, people that I've had on have been, people that have just moved abroad or connected to missions. You're the first diplomat's daughter, you know, that I've had on. So yeah, I would love it if you could talk a little bit about kind of what that's like and that life, you know, within moving around and
Sure.
And your book. So, I would love it if you would talk about your book too.
Yes, sure thing. So yeah, I wrote this book kind of like as a love letter to other third culture kids. So I called it as Tales of a Diplomat's Daughter, because it's kind of like that fairy tale feeling of what, like if you think tales, it's like, oh, fairy tales, right? It's like kind of like that world outside of your own world. It's a little bit different. And I like the ring of that title. So I kind of went with that, where it's like, it feels like a different life. When I was writing it, it really did feel like a different life, where, and also I was writing it from a perspective of a child, like the limited knowledge that I had. So like, for example, growing up as a diplomat's daughter, there were different pressures either spoken over me or that I put on myself based on the experiences that I had. And I held on to that really tightly because I thought that that's how the world works. And so, for example, having Asian parents, that meant that they wanted things done a certain way. And I think this is where my A-type personality comes from, is where they expect me to get good grades and they expect me to present myself in a certain way, whether it's at school or at embassy parties. So that's the, that's, you know, for people listening, embassies represent different countries and different nations. So we were part of the Philippine embassy and we moved around because of that. And we were representing the Philippines. And my parents always said, you know, you're representing the Philippines. So you need to make sure that you're put together. And there's a scene from The Princess Diaries where she's learning princess classes from her grandma. And that was my life. Like, my mom had to teach me how to do, you know, how to sit properly, how to walk properly, how to have certain conversations. And like, apparently they told me when I was really young, I wasn't afraid to have like political conversations with other ambassadors. And so I have no recollection whatsoever. But my parents told me that that was the kind of little girl that I was. And so I think all these pressures of needing to be perfect, I think there was absolutely no room for mistakes. And I think that's something that I held on to because that was the pattern that I was seeing as a child. And my limited understanding of the world was, if it's done, it has to be done this way, because if it's not done this way, it will end up, you know, like, I will end up getting punished for not getting good grades, or I would end up getting punished if I don't act a certain way. And so I talk a lot about that in the book, where this fear that's been lingering over me of perfection has basically was the chains that kept me from being free to explore different things, like explore a different career, or, you know, do things in quote differently. I felt like I always had to like walk this straight and narrow. And also like the mixture of going to church and being a Christian and both sides, where I felt like it kind of gelled into like this idea of, I have to be perfect because not only do my parents expect me to be perfect, but also like, if you read Bible verses, like, you know, you need to be strong and courageous, you know, you need to be walking the straight and narrow, you need to. And so like, I had this very like, I guess like simple understanding of the world because I was really young, because I didn't want certain outcomes. So I just worked really hard to get good grades. And there were fun things. Like, I don't want people to think that I was just like, you know, like this very uptight kind of child.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I was, there's still things that I did. Like I had drama club and like soccer and, you know, like typical childhood things. But there was always this lingering thought in the back of my head, like that I had to present myself a certain way. And so that's pretty much what the book is about. Talking about how limited my understanding was as a child, especially moving around. So when I went to the Philippines, one of the things that was really tough on me was the, I would want to say, like, basically unkind words that were spoken to me. So when I moved back to the Philippines from elementary school to middle school, in middle school, the other kids at that, in quote, international school that wasn't really international, were saying things like, oh, why don't you speak Tagalog? Like, why don't you speak Filipino well enough? Like, why don't you understand this? And certain relatives would say, like, you know, Korean, go home. Like, just like that. And
your relatives,
as a child,
would say that.
Yeah. It was my relatives that would be like, why don't you speak well enough? You know, go home. And like, and there's this part in the book where I basically explore the thought process of that. And when my relative said, like, Korean, go home, I wrote this aspect of like this thought process that I never verbalized, where I was like, does he not know I can't go back even if I wanted to? Why is he saying this? And I explore the fact that maybe what he's saying has nothing to do with me. Maybe he's insecure about the fact that, you know, I don't speak the same language, or maybe he didn't have the, you know, he doesn't have the empathy because he was also young. And I explore the things that I've learned in the past that kind of break down thought processes that I've gone through in the past, and where I just said, like, kind of like I took everything as face value, where I was like, this is it. There's no other way around it. So I don't know if you had similar thoughts like growing up as well, because I wanted to ask you about that, actually.
Something that you said that stuck out to me, that is very different than kind of the mission, than the Christian missions world, you know, is on one hand, I was at my school and I was, you know, the only little white kid, and everyone knew I was a Christian. And so there was a lot of, kind of making fun of that, I guess, and kind of demeaning. And so I felt like I was kind of aware, you know, that like, oh, I'm representing these guys' perceptions of an entire religion, you know, that I kind of am associated with and believe in. So there were pressures there, you know, and, you know, on one hand, you're like, oh, I'm representing my God, you know,
like, yeah,
that there's a certain pressure there. But I mean, something that you kind of said that just kind of like, I don't know, I physically felt, you know, the weight of kind of your words when you're just kind of like, oh, we represent the Philippines, you know. And I mean, I think religion, you know, and the idea of, you know, sovereign beings and God is very different than kind of like a sovereign state nation, you know, and kind of having the weight of, you know, your family, and then you by extension representing, you know, your country, your, you know, your nationality. I mean, that's got to be huge. And I don't know, when you kind of said that, I was like, oh my word. As a young child, to kind of even be aware that, you know, you're kind of the face of the Philippines to these other, you know, ambassadors or people. And that just seemed really weighty and definitely not something that I had as a missionary kid growing up. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, I didn't even think about that because it was normal for me. Right. Like, the Princess Diaries, Mia's life. Like, it's just,
yeah,
I related so much to that movie because I really had to sit through these formal dinners. And I remember if I didn't sit well, or, you know, my back wasn't straight, or like, you know, wow, if I dropped like something and I tried to like grab it underneath the table. This is like me at the age of 7. Like, imagine, yeah, that. Yeah. And me hearing an earful about how that wasn't, you know, that wasn't ethically correct. Like, that was not, you know, that whole thing. It really did feel like it. And I think maybe even processing it now, maybe it was just a comment that my mom and dad made, or maybe it really was an earful of feeling the weight that I had to. And one thing I've realized, because I talk a lot about this with just friends in general, where I wonder, because I am the oldest, if my parents were just learning how to juggle being a first-time parent as well. And yeah, as they were experiencing their... Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to... Within your siblings, where do you place...
I'm the oldest. So
okay, yeah. Me too.
My parents...
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think my parents were just learning how to do the whole diplomatic life, because that was their first assignment as well. So I think they were trying to figure out how to navigate raising a child. First of all, is hard.
Yeah.
So much harder to raise a third culture kid, because they're raising me outside of their culture and what they understand. And back in the 90s, you know, like, internet was just slowly becoming a thing. So it's not like they had all the resources in the world at their fingertips. So looking back, feeling like, you know, having this pressure and then processing that. Okay, first of all, it's not pushing away what I've gone through. Like, it's not minimizing what I've gone through, but it's, first of all, acknowledging what I went through was valid and working through that. And then once I'm healed from that, realizing that maybe my parents really didn't know what they were doing too. And that they just knew that they didn't want to get fired from their job, and that they wanted stability for this family. And I think that they were just doing what they knew was good. And my parents were like really top notch of their schooling days. So I think that was their understanding of what a good life looks like. So they felt that if I did that as well, that my job would be secured. And of course, we know that that's not how the world works anymore. Getting a degree doesn't mean all that much nowadays. I'm sure it opens a lot of doors, but you know, I think they were just living through the principles of their understanding as well. And so that's kind of generally what my book talks about looking at what happened and then trying to figure out what happened around it or some of the other possibilities, like, you know, the kids in my school not knowing how to interact with someone who looks like them but speaks like this, you know, and me vice versa, because I don't know how to interact with people who've lived in one place their whole lives. And I didn't feel comfortable in this environment, and verbalizing that and being able to talk about that. So, yeah, like, this is actually kind of healing, too, to be able to talk about it for other people to point out how weighty it really was. And you don't really understand something unless, you know, someone points it out, right? Like, just how you pointed out how weighty that is. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. It is weighty.
Yeah. And I mean, I wonder if that's a common, you know, TCK experience. Because I've certainly had that where, like, I'll say something, you know, to a close friend or, you know, to my wife or whatever. And they'll be like, oh, you did what? Like, what happened? And just being like, that's not normal, and that's like, that's crazy, you know. And just being like, oh yeah, I guess that is crazy. And sometimes, you know, within the TCK world or whatever, we can normalize things or be like, oh yeah, it's just the way things are. And I like what you said. Yeah, having other people to speak the validation of crazy things that happen into your life and weighty things is good, you know, and it can be healing. Something you said, just kind of with your parents that kind of struck me. I was in a previous podcast, I was just talking about family and you're just talking about kind of being, you know, growing up with Asian parents and kind of A-type personality, and then just your schooling, and there's all these pressures that are kind of pushing you, you know, into this perfect, you know, kid, I guess. But I kind of wanted to just ask about all those pressures kind of moving you in through school. And you mentioned earlier getting into the top school in Korea, which I assume that sounds very impressive. I just kind of wanted to ask about your journey through that and kind of with all these things that pushed you into that. And that's not a super clear question, but I don't know.
It's okay. From the gist of what you were asking, you were asking about just the journey of, like, possibly healing and, like, going into Korea and, you know, school, getting into one of the top universities. Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So let me just preface this by saying that I was an average student in high school because in Egypt, there were a lot more things to do other than schoolwork. And I think I found community in other kids who were just doing life, and the most important thing for me really was community and making people feel welcome. Like, it was no surprise I was, like, greeting at church and, like, the welcoming committee. And I think it's because, you know, I wanted that and I yearned for that. And let me just preface that it's really hard to get into the Korean universities, and I didn't even know they existed. So it really was by grace that I got in, because it was just a pastor who happens to be our pastor in Korea visited us in Egypt because he had different things going on. And he mentioned it to me, and he's like, Maria, your Korean is really good. We don't want you to lose it, because I was applying to go to Liberty University, and I actually did get in in Virginia. And I was so ready. I planned my college career, which is no surprise to people around me. There, I was like, I knew exactly what church I was going to go to. I knew which friends I was going to hang out. Wow. I knew which professor, like, that whole shebang.
Oh my goodness.
I knew it. So, like, I was like, I was so ready for it.
Yeah.
And then this pastor's like, you know, there's other universities in the States that have really good Korean programs, or you might want to explore going back to Korea because it is home for you. And I was like, trying to see whether or not this was, like, a plausible thing. And actually, I think the biggest fear in me was, it's not planned. It's the unknown. if I go to Korea, which I didn't even know had universities, but according to my parents, we passed by my university all the time when I was growing up. So like they were totally for it because they knew the area. They knew Korea was so much safer. You know, public transportation would be a lot easier. So I think they would be more at peace. And also it's like very close to the Philippines where they were living at the moment at that time. And they were so like if I really wanted to come home for the weekend, I could. Like, it was just a 4-hour plane ride, right? Like, TCK is just a 4-hour plane ride.
Just a 4-hour. Yeah.
So, like, they felt a little bit more at peace if I did end up going to Korea. But I think for me, it really was, like, an act of surrender. Just trusting that this is where God wanted me to be at that point in time. So I really can't say that it was done out of merit or anything that I did. I'm sure, you know, like, you know, doing my best in my studies. I was pretty an average student. I wasn't bad, but I wasn't great at that point in time because I think my parents have loosened up at that point because that was their second assignment. They were a little bit higher on the totem pole at that point. Yeah. And so, yeah, for me, it was, it was really done by grace and out of surrender. So I honestly, like filling up the application form, it was like pulling teeth because I was like, I don't want to do this. I remember my mom filling it out for me, and eventually she's like, just write the essay. You know, like I'll fill out the forms for you, but just write the essay. And I was like, I don't want to do this. Yeah. And eventually I remember, I think the cry in my heart really was, God, are you going to send me people who love you as much as I do or even more? Because in Liberty, I knew that was going to happen because I knew there were people who were already there, like friends who've gone there, who are still there by the time if I were to move. And so I know I would have that kind of guidance, but like going to Korea would be a completely open slate. And I had, you know, like nothing was planned. And that's what scared me because I liked the assurance. And I think this is something I processed in therapy years ago, was that one of the reasons I feel like I have to plan things is because I couldn't control anything as a child. And if I could control my schedule, at least I knew what was coming and that, you know, it wouldn't come out of nowhere. And so, yeah, that was, I think, a really big step of faith for me. And so, of course, we know we got in at this point, like at this point in time. But like at that point, I was like really scared. And then I got in and my parents were really happy. I was really disappointed, which would be the complete different reaction if a Korean was listening to this and heard this, because it's a big deal. Education is such a big deal in Korea. Yeah. It's such, you know, like Asian culture, and like if you watch a Korean drama called Sky Castle, it's not too far from the truth. Just like the intensity of moms sending kids to like after school, and so for me to be disappointed into getting into one of the top schools in Korea at that time, I just had no idea, right? And then I went, I loved it, I found my forever, like, you know, my ride or die people there. I had an amazing church community. Actually, I'm like, I do many reunions with them in different countries from here, like from time to time. So like, I love the fact that I went to Korea, but at that point in time, it really was grace. Like it wasn't anything that I planned or anything that I could boast about.
Yeah.
And it really was the stepping stone towards healing that I really needed, because I was in a safe space to grow. And I realized that's also not normal for a lot of people, because I talk about some TCKs who went to college and they didn't find that safe space and they couldn't find, you know, their group of people that they could ride or die with. Like, these are the people who I know at any point in time, I could just give them a call and I know I feel safe. You know, we don't have to be talking for like, we haven't like spoken maybe like 3 months or whatever, but we all have a group chat room and we keep in touch there. And I think it's just so, like, you know, it's just so special to have a group of people that you know will be there for you and you know you'll be there for them. So like I think that was like the kickoff of healing that I really needed, because some of them are third culture kids too. Like, I have a friend who's Korean, but she grew up in West Africa her whole life. So the way that she talks is, I love it. She's just very expressive. There's certain moments where I'd be like, oh, yep, that is definitely West African, you know? And she misses, like, and you guys get to introduce each other to like home cultures. Like, I have a friend in Malaysia. Actually, a couple of us were just in Malaysia earlier this year. And, you know, she was teaching us all about Malaysian food and just, I love it. So, yeah, like that was the kickstart of healing that I needed, and where these friends just basically felt like family. And because they understood where I was coming from and just accepted me wholeheartedly, too, I think it was just such a beautiful thing. And to be able to find people who you could connect with who went to something similar, because even though some of them aren't their culture kids, they were adult their culture kids because they were living in Korea outside of their home country for the first time in their lives. So it was, it's just, I love it. I love those group of friends.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's definitely something that I've kind of heard you touch on a couple times throughout your story, is just kind of this community of people going through similar experiences. Even when you're talking about in Egypt and living with the international community there of expats and kind of the bubble there. And and then even just hearing your story, you know, of having everything planned out for Liberty and then just kind of going to the Korean university and finding your friends there. I wanted to ask just kind of this idea of community. I mean, you've talked a little bit about kind of how important it is to you. I want to ask how you have created and found community in the places that you've been. You know, you talked a little bit about it in at the Korean university and then kind of in the Philippines, but kind of how has community shaped and impacted your life? How have you found it? How have you created community? Open-ended question about community.
When I was younger, obviously, it was almost, you know, predestined. I don't like that word. It was chosen for me. My parents chose the school I went to, chose the church we went to, you know, based on their discernment. That's how it was. And so the community that I ended up joining was directly linked to the decisions my parents made. But in Korea, like I said, there were no plans, right? Because for me, community is very important, which is why I planned everything. And and actually, it really, once again, it really was by grace that I found this community, because I was in one of the school buildings at this point, like I was a month in, and I was very depressed about like leaving family and like starting, like just not being able to connect. And like the international school students that I ended up getting to know at my college, that was their first time leaving abroad. So it wasn't like TCK like me in a sense where like I was already exposed from a young age. It's like people from Vietnam or like Indonesia, they're coming to Korea for the first time. So they're leaving their home. So like that initial, you know, like they didn't understand why things work that way. And it was just like very different kind of interaction. And like, I remember just having a hard time connecting with them in certain ways. And then eventually, like I was just, I just went to one of the bathrooms in the building at where I had one of my classes, and I was just washing my hands. And like on the dryer thing, there was like this little, I don't know what you call it, kind of like a sticker pamphlet thing, pamphlet, but it was just like the sticker thing on the dryer, and it said English speaking Christian ministry. And I was like, oh, okay, interesting. And I took note of that, and I was like, you know, because there's a lot of like cults in Korea, so I was like really scared about like trying this. And then I talked to a mentor of mine in the States, and I told her, I was like, oh, I saw this thing. And she's very like not tech savvy at all. Like if I showed her a link, like she didn't know that you'd have to click it. She'll just sit there and just like wait for your response. Like she was that kind of not super tech savvy. And so she said, when I told her about it, she's like, oh, why don't you Google it? And I was like, and she's like, oh, I didn't even know I knew that word to Google something. And so I was like, oh, yeah. And I Googled it and I looked it up. It's on campus. It's really close to where I live. And it was on a after class. I was in the area anyway. So I checked it out, and I remember greeting somebody there. And because there's in my school, there's different, I guess, like if you think of university as like a whole, my section is like the international division, and where actually they've been praying for people to be part of that community, because a lot of the people that go through this campus ministry, they're exchange students. So like Korean American exchange students that would come in and then leave. after 6 months, after the semester was over. So when I came and then I told them I'm from this division, and then the girl looked at me dead straight in the eyes and she's like, "We've been praying for you." And then I started tearing up because I was like, what is this? You know? Oh no, I'm starting to tear up right now. And she was like, "We've been praying for you because we've been praying for people like long-term students like you who are going to carry this ministry." And the waterworks are coming. But for me, that was like, God was answering the prayers of people who were looking for me. Like, I was needed in this community. And at that time, there were only like two other students who were long-term students, part of that campus ministry. So when she said that, I felt like I was at home immediately. Because I was like, oh my gosh, like these people wanted me. They were looking for someone exactly like me in their prayers. Like, you know, for people to just pray for you. Like that boggles me. Like they needed you. Like it's such a beautiful thing. And then when I entered the sanctuary area, it was like basement. It looked kind of dingy. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad there's like welcomers there, because like if it wasn't, it'd be like, oh my otherwise, gosh, like basement. Yeah. And it's not like it's a school basement. So it's like a theater. Like there was like a, you know, like multimedia theater kind of room. It's not like, you know, like basement, like, you know, like a parking lot kind of feeling, like just to let you know. But when I went in, I just felt like the presence of God there. And I saw praise and worshiping the Lord. And that was the prayer and the cry of my heart in Egypt, where it's like, God, am I going to find people who love you just as much as I do and even more? And that went above and beyond my expectation. And I was like, and then that's how I found community, to see people who wanted to live this life, the like similar beliefs and similar faith. Wanting to live according to the word of God. And I remember I wrote a whole blog post about it like ages ago, and it still makes me cry writing about it, because it just really was like, I really felt it was meant for me. Like I was handpicked for this. And I loved serving in that ministry all throughout my 4 years in college. And I built so many relationships with people that came and went. And to this day, I'm actually still friends with like a good chunk of them. You know, maybe not like on a, like we talk on a daily basis kind of thing, but like on a, like if I'm going to go to Hong Kong, like I know someone's there, you know, like if I decide to go to the States or Canada, like I know that someone from that ministry is there. And that's why community is so important to me, and having that faith-filled community to be able to walk this road, because I don't think we're not created to walk this alone. And I think that's why it's so important for me to also give back, because I was filled with so much just love throughout those 4 years. And I remember during graduation, my mom was like asking me to come back to, I think they were in Oman at that point, or Canada. No, they were in Canada. No.
Okay.
I don't remember. They were in one of those countries at that point. And she came for my graduation. She and my brother came for my graduation. And at that point, she was saying, like, you know, come back. You're done with college. Like, go work. You know, like, come with us. Like, it's going to be a lot easier. Like, we have connections, etc. And I don't know if it was, like, the stubbornness in me, because I'm like, you controlled my whole life. Like, leave me alone kind of narrative in my head. But I really was determined to stay in Korea because I loved it, because it really was home, and there was like a community that I loved. And I remember during my graduation party, she got to meet a lot of people from my community. And I think that was when she let go of the reins of my life. Not that she was controlling it or anything, but like she felt so much more at peace knowing that there were so many people taking care of me, that I'm well loved. Because I think she had this idea where like, I was just doing college, like maybe similar to her experience. Maybe she was projecting. I don't know. But I think when she met these amazing people who were part of my community, she was like, okay, like she's set. Like I don't have to worry about her. You know, like she's well taken care of and so loved in this community. And so, yeah, like that is my story of community and how important it is, which is also to segue into the fact that I also have a podcast, which I love creating a community. Like I love being able to connect with people and create a community and where people are seen and known and loved and heard, and letting them know that they're not alone. Like my tagline, my unofficial tagline that I don't say often. Is there's always hope and you're never alone. And I think that's what I wanted to extend to other third culture kids, because I think I was so blessed enough to be able to have all these experiences in life that I realized not everybody gets to have. And so this is me, you know, paying it forward, making sure that I also create a safe community and where people can express themselves and be themselves and share their story and know that they're seen and heard. And so, yeah, that is, I guess, answers your question. I hope that answers your question regarding community.
I don't even know what else to say. I feel like we should wrap it up there. That was great. I was just kind of blown away when you talked about walking into the ministry and just kind of having that one girl just kind of look you in the eyes and be like, we've been praying for you and waiting for you, and just kind of the power of being desired and wanted within a community and people. It seems simple, right? But like when people want you to be somewhere and they like you being around, like it's so powerful. And it's something that I don't know. Yeah. Maybe as TCKs, we don't get that as much. And it's something that we really long for and desire. And yeah, it makes me happy. And it's awesome that you're able to find that at college. And I echo and voice kind of similar thing with creating the podcast and just wanting to build connections with people and let people know that they're not alone and their feelings and experiences are valid. And community is so incredibly important. I just love what you said. You mentioned your podcast, but I would love it if you could you talk a little more about that, or share about that too to our audience.
Before I answer that question, I just thought of something regarding community, because you also asked earlier about healing, and they were the same places that I was able to be vulnerable with, knowing that their intentions were not out of malice, that whatever advice they gave me, because we've been walking this life for a long time, like whatever they say to me, it's not out of like they have an ulterior agenda, it really is done out of a place of wanting to see me succeed and do well in life. And it was those steps, like those everyday steps of like trusting them, that brought me to a place of healing and knowing that I'm loved, and that knowing that I'm seen. And actually, even just this past trip, when I went to Malaysia with some of them, I remembered one of my friends was like, we were loading up to go back into the city because we were camping. And we were trying to pick who sits where. And she was like, oh, Marie, you have you get car sick, right? Why don't you sit in the front? Just that small detail. Just being reminded. And I was like, I haven't seen you in years, like literal years. And, we've been friends. Okay. Like, granted, I've been friends with her for like 13 years. But, just like those details where it's like, oh, my gosh, she knows. Like, I'm so cared for, like, in that way. That was the beginning of my healing journey. And so, segue to the podcast healing. For those of you guys,
I had a funny thing with kind of the community and knowing one another. One of my really good friends, actually Julian Laurie, who does jazz music, and he does the intro and outro for this podcast. We're really good friends, and it's funny that kind of your knowing each other kind of segued into caring and wanting to. But within our group of friends, we tend to, know each other and make fun of the little nuances and stuff that we have. And there's just a funny moment when a group of us and friends were having dinner, and Julian, my friend, he really likes jazz music, but also he doesn't like it when there's like no music playing. And so I reached out to him and was like, oh, hey, we probably want music playing on in the background, you know, in case there's this awkward silence. And he was like, oh my gosh, yeah, you know, know me so well. And yeah, so it's a great feeling, right? Vice versa, when you know someone really well as well, and you're able to connect with them, and then they're able to respond with that. It's, yeah, I don't know. Your story just kind of prompted that feeling. But sorry I interrupted you for the.
No. Yeah. That's great. Like, I think it really is such a beautiful thing to like have somebody just remember small things about you. I remember there's this guy friend of mine who if I send a message past like nine mm-hmm. o'clock, like let's say I send at midnight, just because like I was on my phone, he'll be like, isn't it way past your bedtime, because like sleep at like nine? And I'd be like, oh my gosh, just those small things that they know about us. But yeah, like that's just the beauty of community, and things like that is healing, like more than we know. And speaking of healing, my podcast, we talk a lot about like healing, and not in the sense of like this is what you do, you know, these are the terms, but I feel like in my podcast it really is just encouraging people to share their story. And when someone shares their story, I know someone will connect in one way or another, whether it be like something someone, like one of my guests, say something in passing, and from that prompt you, the listener, to kind of think about your own life and reflect on whether or not, you know, was this normal, you know, like, oh, this person said that, you know, kind of to kickstart asking a lot of self-awareness questions. And that's kind of what I do on the podcast. We usually choose a topic. And if there's a certain topic that you're interested in, you go walk through, like look through. Apparently the top grossing topic is friends and relationships. Dating, that whole aspect. Yeah. And the other one was, this was quite a surprise to me, but it's TCKs in the workplace. So those are the two top grossing like podcasts that I have up. And so go listen to that, you guys. Apparently those are really big hot topics for Third Culture kids. And so I love just honestly just hearing other people's stories. And honestly, Zach, I just want to say thank you so much for doing what you're doing, because it also gave me the space to be able to share my story, which I don't always get to do on my podcast. Yeah. And so thank you for giving me the room and the space. And I love what you're doing, reaching other Third Culture kids as well. That's clearly a passion that we both share, to grow the wider TCK community, knowing that they're not alone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. And yeah, all of Marie's her book and podcast and all of that will be linked in this episode. So yeah, please do go check it out. It really is fantastic. Marie, is there any closing thoughts or anything else you wanted to add before we wrap up?
I think I just want to say, because we dove deep into community quite a bit in this episode. So I just want to say that don't give up hope in finding community. There's always going to be people that are like you, and there are people that are going to be not like you. And those people that were meant to be in your life are going to be in your life, because no matter what season I'm in, no matter where I go, I know with my whole heart, there are going to be people there that you can connect with. And even here in the Philippines, like I honestly didn't even really know there were that many Third Culture kids here. But then we had this hangout last year, and I found this group of people that I was able to connect with, and they're really good friends of mine now. And so I'm so thankful that I was able to find them. So, you know, people in your life who are meant to be, they're going to be there. And so I'm so thankful for my group of friends. So don't ever give up hope, you guys. Always know that at the end of the day, there really is hope, and that really you're not alone. And so that's what I just wanted to say.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you, Marie. Hope you guys enjoyed our conversation. Marie's book and podcast will be linked in the description, so be sure to go check that out. Next month, I'll be chatting with a friend of mine from Nairobi, Kenya. Until then, stay safe, and thank you all for your continued support, and tune in next time at the Worn Shoes Podcast.